So far in the early life of Joseph, we've been looking at some crucial questions. The two we've asked so far: why were you born? And do you know who you are? We've remembered that Joseph, an arrogant, spoiled teenager, drove his brothers to violence. We remembered that Joseph, the more mature man after he'd been carried off to Egypt, showed a faithfulness that had him promoted and promoted to senior positions until he fell foul of Mrs. Potiphar and landed up in jail. Here's today's question, if I can. Are you willing to wait for God? Joseph, in this chapter, is waiting. He's waiting because there's nothing else he can do. He can't get out of prison. He can't appeal his sentence. He certainly can't escape. Here he is, he's stuck in an Egyptian prison. He's far from home, and the people at home think he's dead anyway. He's been falsely accused of rape by Potiphar's wife, and so he waits. And I've already said, I hate waiting. And I suspect you hate waiting. Thing is, as we've said before, as we look at Joseph's story, we know how it turns out, but Joseph didn't. In the pit, at Potiphar's house, now in prison, Joseph has no idea of the way ahead. So just to remind you what chapter 40 said, let's summarize chapter 40 in a few words. Joseph in jail, two men, two dreams, two interpretations, one man lives, one man dies, one man forgets. Joseph in jail. That's chapter 40. Nothing has changed for Joseph. He starts the chapter in jail, he ends the chapter in jail. Nothing changes. And yet it does, because all the while Joseph is waiting to see what's going to happen next. And waiting is perhaps the hardest discipline of the Christian life. That's why I did the little bit earlier on about New Zealand and William Carey and so on. We hate waiting, don't we? And probably, can we? Probably all of us are waiting for something at the moment. We're waiting for an appointment. We're waiting for a diagnosis. We're waiting for a treatment. We're waiting for a phone call, for a visit, for an invitation. We're waiting for news of the family. All our lives, we seem to be waiting for something. Waiting for God to do something. Waiting for God to move. Waiting for a loved one to come to Christ. Waiting to find out what it is God wants us to do. Waiting to feel valued and forgiven. Waiting for our prayers to be answered. We all wait. We keep on waiting. And what do we learn by waiting? Warren Wiersbe, the writer of The Message, said, God permitted Joseph to be treated unjustly and put into prison to help build his character and prepare him for the tasks that lay ahead. The prison would be a school where Joseph would learn to wait on the Lord. He would learn that God's delays are not God's denials. We all spend a lot of time waiting for something to happen. The question is, while we're waiting, what do we do? Well, the first thing is, we try to be faithful. We learn in the story that Pharaoh's chief baker and his cupbearer, that's the butler, upset Pharaoh. We don't know why, but they both ended up in jail with Joseph. And we don't know how long Joseph had been in prison at that time, but as far as he's concerned, one day is the same as another, and another two prisoners come along and they're entrusted to him. He has to look after them because he's been made the leader of the prisoners. But you know, even if you're the leader of the prisoners, if you were a prisoner, you're still in prison. So it didn't help him very much. He couldn't see the future. He didn't know that the cupbearer, the butler, was eventually going to be his ticket out. He'd no way of knowing at the time, and he had to wait another 2 years anyway. But he didn't even know that. Joseph didn't know the future. There he was in prison, being, why was I unjustly accused? Why did people turn against me? Why have my dreams turned to ashes? You know, he was asking himself these questions, and yet all the time his example to us is he carried on. He remained faithful to God and to his duties, and just as the supervising prisoner, he supervised really very effectively and very well. In Ecclesiastes we read, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And he did. He took hold of the ordinary responsibilities of life and made sure that they got done. He lived in the reality of today, not in the wishful world of tomorrow. And he was faithful in everything that he did. And faithfulness brings its own reward. Don't focus on our lives as we wish they were, or on the church as we wish it or as we wish it was, because we are living our lives as they are today, and we are in the church as it is today, and our priority should be how we live today. Martin Luther King Jr. said, and it's a little bit of an old-fashioned metaphor now, but I'm going to read it because I think it's good. Whatever your life's work, do it well. If it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, like Shakespeare wrote poetry, like Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. I don't know if he did this as a tongue twister deliberately, but he had a, you know, Martin Luther King is saying, however mundane, however routine, however simple, however unimportant the job may appear to be, if that's the job we've been given to do, then we do it with all our heart and with all our soul and with all our strength. Because God's hand was on him, we've learned that Joseph had been promoted to be in charge of the other prisoners. And because he was faithful, when the two new prisoners came to him, he didn't turn them away. He didn't know that by taking care of them, he was advancing the cause of his own freedom. So, the first question for today is, will we be faithful where we are in this time, even in those times when life seems to make no sense? Be faithful. And then, be ready. The butler and the baker dreamt, and they turned to Joseph's for advice. Now, we know there are dreams all the way through Joseph's story. First he had dreams and that annoyed his brothers, and that got him dropped into the pit. Then he has the two dreams that we've read about this morning, the butler and the baker. And then eventually Pharaoh will have a two-part dream, but we'll have to come back to that another time. The butler and the baker came to Joseph with their dreams. Now, it might be that Joseph was saying to himself, hang on a in it. I told my brothers about the dreams I had, how I was great and they were worthless, how I was going to amount to everything and how they were going to amount to nothing, how I was very important and how they were a waste of time. I told my brothers that dream and somehow it annoyed them. And now here I've got the butler and the baker, and they're coming to me and they're asking me to interpret their dreams. And what I really ought to be saying to them is, you know, dreams don't work. Dreams get you into trouble. My advice to you is to forget about those dreams and just call them dreams. But he didn't say that. He actually responded to them and he helped them, because I think that somehow deep inside him, when he thought back to those teenage dreams about the way God was going to use him, he actually still believed them. He actually still thought they were going to happen. So he didn't say, go away and take your silly dreams away. He used his gifts to help them. And so here's question two for us this morning. Are we ready to serve God right where we are, even when what we are asked to do seems a little bit silly? Even when what we are asked to do seems a little bit pointless? Even when we'd rather be asked to do something entirely different? Are we willing to serve God the way he wants us to? And then when we read chapter 40, he tells the butler, you're going to be released in 3 days and everything's going to be good for you. I just want to ask you one favour. Just one thing. Remember me. Tell Pharaoh about me. Tell Pharaoh that there's this guy sitting in prison who's actually done nothing wrong. So use the influence you've got to get me out of here. So he's ready to serve God where he is, but in actual fact, he'd rather serve God anywhere than other in prison. And so he says, get me out. It's as if he's saying, I'm here, but this isn't my whole life. I accept where I am for the moment, but I'd still like to be set free. And 2 years later, that dream came true. He never lost hope. The singer Joan Boaz, We Shall Overcome. I won't sing it for you. We shall overcome someday. Put it this way. You don't get to choose how you're going to die or when. You only get to choose how you're going to live now. Mozart. Joan of Arc. Alexander the Great. Emily Bronte. Anne Bronte had two things in common. The first thing they had in common is they all died. The second thing they all had in common is they all died very young. They were all dead by the time they were 30. And in those years, those few years that they had, they achieved great things, whether in history or in literature or in music. You know, it's not a question of how many years we have, whether it's 20 or 90 or whatever. It's a question of how we use the years that we get, whether we use them to serve ourselves or whether to serve God and society. And that brings us back to Joseph's what-ifs. The cupbearer didn't remember Joseph, but forgot him. After all that Joseph had done for him, the cupbearer forgot him. What happens all the time in life? We make promises we don't keep. We intend to stay in touch, but we don't. We plan to call on an old friend, but we don't. The cupbearer would have said, oh yes, of course I'll remember you, Joseph, but he'd got caught up in his new life. And it made Joseph think, what if he never remembers? What if I die in prison? What if I never get to clear my name, bringing it forward? What if I lose my job? What if the kids become ill? What if we run out of money? What if the grandchildren get into trouble? What if there's a problem in the church? Put yourself in Joseph's place. The only people who can help him think he's dead, or they think he's committed a vile crime, or they've forgotten him completely. What do you do when you're in that situation, when you feel totally alone, when you feel that everybody's forsaken you, when you think everybody's let you down, when you feel you've been betrayed and enslaved and falsely accused and imprisoned and forgotten? Do we thank God and move on? Or do we turn our backs on him? You see, the thing is, God never hurries. Joseph came to realize that God doesn't keep time in the same way that we do. As Psalm 90 says, he's from everlasting to everlasting. As Peter says, with the Lord one day is as a thousand years, and a thousand years is as one day. As A.W. Tozer said, God never hurries. There are no deadlines against which he must work. God is bigger than the clock. He's never in a hurry. He's never late. He's never behind schedule. God's timing is the right timing. And even though the cupbearer forgot Joseph, God didn't. What do you do while you're waiting? You wait on the Lord, because those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They'll mount up with wings like eagles. They'll run and not be weary. They'll walk and not be faint. Hymn we used to sing. God moves in a mysterious way. His wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps on the sea and rides against the storm. That was written by William Cowper in 1774. He wrote it after a huge bout of depression. He wrote it because of painful experiences in his past. And there must have been times in Cowper's life, there must have been time in Joseph's life, there must have been times in our lives when we ask, my God, why have you forsaken me? But the story of Joseph reminds us that God works his purpose out in his good time. So let's ask one last time. Are you willing to wait for God? The sermon ends where it begins, with Joseph in prison, unjustly in prison, alone, forgotten, thinking he's hit a dead end. And the story is over, or so it seems to him. About 2,000 years later, 12 men watch a Roman execution, a crucifixion. And there are three victims, and one of them is their friend, their master, their leader, the one who they thought would change everything. And they stand at the foot of the cross and they believe the story is over. They believe their hopes have been dashed. They believe that their futures have been denied. They believe that everything is lost. Or is it? Perhaps, just perhaps, God has a greater plan. And 3 days later, they learned that he had. Let's pray together.